Monday, July 7th. The first reading from Genesis chapter 28, verses 10 through 22. Jacob departed from Beersheba and proceeded toward Haran. When he came upon a certain shrine, as the sun had already set, he stopped there for the night. Taking one of the stones at the shrine, he put it under his head and lay down to sleep at that spot. Then he had a dream. A stairway rested on the ground, with its top reaching to the heavens, and God's messengers were going up and down on it. And there was the Lord standing beside him and saying, I, the Lord, am the God of your forefather Abraham and the God of Isaac. The land on which you are lying I will give to you and your descendants. These shall be as plentiful as the dust of the earth, and through them you shall spread out east and west, north and south. In you and your descendants all the nations of the earth shall find blessing. Know that I am with you. I will protect you wherever you go and bring you back to this land. I will never leave you until I have done what I have promised you. When Jacob awoke from his sleep, he exclaimed, Truly the Lord is in this spot, although I did not know it. In solemn wonder, he cried out, How awesome is this shrine! This is nothing else but an abode of God, and that is the gateway to heaven. Early the next morning, Jacob took the stone that he had put under his head, set it up as a memorial stone, and poured oil on top of it. He called the site Bethel, whereas the former name of the town had been Luz. Jacob then made this vow, If God remains with me, to protect me on this journey I am making, and to give me enough bread to eat and clothing to wear, and I come back safe to my father's house, the Lord shall be my God. This stone that I have set up as a memorial stone shall be God's abode. Hadock Commentary. This mysterious vision tended to comfort the patriarch with the assurance that God would now take him under his more particular protection when he was destitute of human aid. The angels ascending foretold that his journey would be prosperous, and descending showed that he would return with safety. Or rather, the latter represented the incarnation of Jesus Christ, born of so many patriarchs from Adam, who was created by God, to the Blessed Virgin Mary. He is the way by which we must ascend, by observing the truth, till we obtain life eternal. Mercy and truth are like the two sides. The virtues of Christ are signified by the steps. Angels descend to announce this joyful mystery to men. They ascend to convey the prayers and ardent desires of the ancient saints to hasten their redemption. Our Savior seems to allude to this passage in John 1:51 and 14:6. God mentions the dead with the living to show that all live to him and that the soul is immortal. Jacob was not ignorant that God fills all places, but he thought that he would not manifest himself thus in a land given to idolatry. He begins to suspect that the place had been formerly consecrated to the worship of the true God, as it probably had by Abraham, who dwelt near Bethel and built an altar on Mount Moriah. Interpreters are not agreed on which of these places Jacob spent the night. St. Augustine supposes it was the latter, in Mount Moriah, where God appointed the tabernacle to remain. Jacob made this monument without any superstition, as the Catholic Church still pours oil or chrism upon her altars in imitation of Jacob. If Protestants pull down altars under the plea of their being superstitious, we cannot but pity their ignorance or malice. The name Bethel signifies the house of God. Bethel was the name which Jacob gave to the place, and the town which was built after his return was called by the same name. Jacob made a vow not simply that he would acknowledge one God, but that he would testify his peculiar veneration for him by erecting an altar at his return and by giving voluntarily the tithes of all he had. The Gospel from Matthew chapter 9, verses 18 through 26. While Jesus was speaking, an official came forward, knelt down before him, and said, My daughter has just died, but come lay your hand on her, and she will live. Jesus rose and followed him, and so did his disciples. A woman suffering hemorrhages for 12 years came up behind him and touched the tassel on his cloak. She said to herself, If only I can touch his cloak, I shall be cured. Jesus turned around and saw her and said, Courage, daughter, your faith has saved you. And from that hour the woman was cured. When Jesus arrived at the official's house and saw the flute players and the crowd who were making a commotion, he said, Go away, the girl is not dead, but sleeping. And they ridiculed him. When the crowd was put out, he came and took her by the hand, and the little girl arose. And news of this spread throughout all that land. Hadock Commentary. This ruler was a prince of the synagogue, and he is called Jairus in Mark and Luke. Let us admire and imitate the humility and kindness of our Redeemer. No sooner had he heard the request of the ruler, but rising up he followed him. The hemorrhaging woman, according to Eusebius, came from Caesarea Philippi, who, in honor of her miraculous cure, afterwards erected a bronze monument descriptive of this event before the door of her house in Caesarea Philippi. Our divine Savior, fearing lest he might alarm the woman by his words, says immediately to her, "Take courage," and at the same time calls her his daughter, because her faith had rendered her such. So says St. John Chrysostom. It was a custom among the Jews at funerals to hire persons to make some doleful music and great lamentations. Ovid also mentions the lugubrious music attendant on funerals. Christ, by saying the girl is not dead, insinuated that she was not dead in such a manner as they imagined, that is, so as to remain dead, but presently to return to life, as if she had only been asleep. In the 11th chapter of St. John's Gospel, Christ again calls death asleep when he says, "Our friend Lazarus sleepeth." Thus he teaches us to be no longer in dread of death, since it was reduced to the condition of a sleep. If you believe this, why do you vainly weep? Why do you afflict yourself? This the Gentiles do, who have not faith. Your child is asleep, not dead, is gone to a place of rest, not to destruction. Therefore the royal prophet says, "Turn, O my soul, into thy rest, for the Lord hath been bountiful to thee." Psalm 114. If then it is a kindness, why should you weep? What else could you do at the death of an adversary, an enemy, the object of your greatest aversion? So says St. John Chrysostom. Christ here asserts that the girl is only asleep to show that it was as easy for him to raise her from death as from sleep. So says Theophylactus. He took her by the hand, as in his hands is the key both of life and death. See Apocalypse 1:18. So he commanded the soul to return and the girl to arise. If after a sinful and worldly life we wish to rise again and be cleansed from the miserable condition of mortal sin, denoted by the girl who was dead, we must cast out of our minds the great multitude of worldly concerns, for whilst these have possession, the mind is unable to recollect itself and apply seriously to consideration. So says St. Gregory.